The big game is this Sunday. Can the all-time GOAT, I didn't write this by the way, get it done against the future GOAT, Brady and Mahomes, going head-to-head, and everyone's talking about who's going to win the big game. Whether you're on the Chiefs or the Bucks, just remember, wherever you're betting is just as important as who you are betting on. That's why I always tell my friends and the listeners of this show to go to MyBookie. MyBookie has all the props for the big game. These guys truly let you bet on anything, whether it's the length of the national anthem, MVP, or the color of the sports drink dumped on the winning coach. MyBookie has a buffet of Chiefs Bucks props for you to chew on. You can even win big on NFL squares. No need to leave the comfort of your home. You can access the sportsbook and casino right from your phone. Don't miss out on the last game of the year. Sign up at MyBookie today and use promo code 3YARDS, that's the word 3YARDS, to have your deposit match halfway up to $1,000. Bet, win, and get paid with MyBookie. Let me introduce you to another sponsor, BestEver.com. That is BSTEVR.com. BestEver.com is a fantasy sports simulator that uses real-life data to simulate hypothetical situations. For example, ever wondered if Dan Marino could win a Super Bowl with a top 10 running game? We all have. You can do that with BestEver.com. Let's say the Dolphins are in the running for a big free agent. Just add him to the current team and simulate games to see how it can turn out. Just open a free account and start building your own story and have BestEver.com spit out game stories just for you. BestEver is not only fun to use, but has many uses beyond just curiosity. Go to BestEver.com. That's BSTEVR.com. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Chris Kaufman is here. Simon Clancy is not. He's feeling under the weather. He should be with us next week. But, you know, it is Super Bowl week, and Chris Kaufman is in Tampa, and he hooked up with Ethan Skolnick. And
I'm on location. I'm on location. I've come out.
Yes, he's reporting live yes. From the site of the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl City. I'm out here for the Super Bowl.
And what did he give you?
We gave you a couple videos later this afternoon. Oh, but I did get my Manscaped swag finally, and I have it. And you know what's funny about that? You know, of course I have. You know what's funny about that though is I opened it up. I opened the box, and you know it's a great looking box. And you open it up, it's got a little message in there on the inside for you. I took a picture of it. I sent it to my brother. I was like, hey, I got my podcast sponsor swag. Figuring he'd laugh or something like that, and he laughed, but he's like, oh yeah, I used that too. It's like, holy shit, all this time I didn't know. I'm like, hey, what should I get my brother for Christmas or something? I could have been getting him the lawnmower 3.0. I could have been getting him refills on the ball toner. The possibilities are endless, and I all this time I just did not know he was a loyal Manscaped customer.
Yeah, it's a necessity nowadays. And of course, you got to use 5RSN and you get 20% off your next order. And trust me, your next order is probably going to be next week and the following week and the following week, because their products, not only are they necessary, they're very good products, very well constructed. The lawnmower 3.0, very useful. I've been using it for months, has not broken, still works, still charges all the way up, still holds its charge. And of course, the ball toner. You know, you almost want to slather yourself in Baltimore. You know, it's a great
it's got a great musk to it.
Yes. Yeah. And before we went on air, you know, of course, you know, disclaimer, I don't give financial advice on this show. Please don't take none of our financial advice. But if Manscaped ever went public, I'd be there. Yeah. I'd be there.
No, I think at this point, like, I'm in the stage of, like, if they wanted to do something like that, go with an ICO, not an IPO. Go with an initial coin offering and go the crypto route and just really capitalize. Not financial advice.
No, wink, wink. Of course not. No. We have to keep saying that.
Yeah.
Another.
No, but in my case, it's like for real, like seriously, yes, disregard everything I said.
I have to say it as well, because it turns out you could get sued.
Okay. I don't want to get sued. That sounds bad, but I really just don't want to lose my job.
Yeah. Another piece of housekeeping. You heard at the top of the show some of our ads. One of our ads and one of our finest sponsors is PrizePicks, of course. And for this week, in advance of the big game, if you pick, and you know how it works, you pick the over-under on fantasy projections. If you can hit 16 of them, I know it's tough, but that's why there's a big prize. $100,000 if you could hit 16 over-unders.
Wow.
This weekend.
What's... How 16, like 16 in a parlay type situation? Is that right?
Exactly. You have to hit 16.
So what's the minimum bet? What's the minimum bet on like a 16 parlay?
Well, in this case, if you are a member of PrizePicks, if you've opened an account, if you've used the promo code 5, FIVE, you get to do it for free.
You get to just pick 16 parlay or for your parlay and just a free entry to try and win that $100,000.
Yes. Wow. And there's other payouts too. Wow. For example, you hit 15 out of 16, $5,000. 14 out of 16, $1,000. 13 out of 16, $250. 12 out of 16, $100. But who cares? You want to hit the 16 out of this.
I need to look this up. Ethan was telling me about this a little bit earlier today, and you know, it's just they've simplified it, and you can just do, you know, over unders of LeBron scoring 25.5 points or something like that, you know, and you can parlay guys from different sports together.
Yes, yes, you can.
And then you can also do, you know, kind of, what he described seemed like kind of a round robin type bet to me, where you got a bunch of picks and you still get credit if most of them come in and not necessarily all of them like a parlay. But yeah, I thought it sounded really interesting and probably something that would take up a lot of my time in the day if I let it.
But yeah, all you got to do is just go to PrizePicks.com, sign up, of course, use the promo code FIVE. And once you make your first deposit, not only do you get a bonus up to $100, but you get an automatic entry into this event, the Super Flex, which is 16 out of 16, $100,000. All right, that's it for all the ads. Not that's it for the show. That would have been hilarious if I had finished the show.
We should cut the show off now. Like, that's it.
That would have been hilarious had I said, okay, that's it, you know, see you next week. And all we do is ads, but we have a lot
five
to talk
seconds,
about.
5 seconds of dead air, and then we come back, you know.
Yeah, but the Dolphins finally have an offensive coordinator.
They have two.
What?
They have two.
Really? I didn't know. Yeah. They have two of them.
Yeah,
I thought his name was Eric Studsville Godsey. Oh no!
Yeah, no, it's
two guys.
It's God Stud.
Oh, okay.
Or the Stud God. Which? Let us know on Twitter which one you like better, the Stud God or God Stud.
You have the trademark on that. If they're really, really good this coming season, yeah, we're gonna start calling them the Stud God.
Or like, okay, instead of God Stud, like if it's really bad, it's more like God's Dud.
yes.
Or if it's really good, it's Stud God. I think that's what we'll probably have to work with.
But yeah, Eric Studsville, George Godsey, those are the new co-coordinators, offensive coordinators. Eric Studsville, known around the league, one of the best running back coaches in the NFL. Truth be told, one of the best coaches, period, in the NFL. George Godsey kind of had that BFF look for Tua Tagovailoa this year, was tight ends coach. now, supposedly, I guess, I don't know how they're going to work this, but if I had to guess, and this is completely a guess, and this is not information, I would say Godsey on the sideline, Studsville in the booth and making the calls. Or
no, I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to say it's Godsey in the booth and Studsville on the sidelines. And and the reason I say that is because Charlie Fry is now here as the quarterback's coach. Mm-hmm. So what we all saw him doing last year was when Robbie Brown went out with COVID, Godsey took over his role on the sidelines with Tua and the quarterbacks, you know, kind of working with them, looking at the defense and stuff like that. And he never gave that back, even when Robbie Brown came back. And you know, there have been reports about him assuming even more of those quarterback duties. But he's giving those back up. You know, Charlie Fry is doing that now. So Charlie Fry is going to be on the sidelines working with the quarterbacks. And so Godsey doesn't seem to me like he'd have a place down there. I think his place is going to be in the booth. And I think it's probably going to be – I think the play caller is going to be Studsville. I don't have any information on that. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's going to be Godsey in the booth kind of, you know, really looking at the defense and giving information into to Studsville so that he can call the plays. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. Now, let's get into this decision-making process. Cameron Wolf has – I guess he's been – you know, I'll go out and – I don't think this is much of a limb to go out on. I think Cameron Wolf is – beat the pants out of everybody else on this story. He's been one step ahead of everybody. And he says, if the Dolphins wanted to hire an outside guy, I think that he thinks they had an opportunity, that this is something mm-hmm. that Brian Flores wants and Brian Flores got. Your thoughts on how this ended up with, and did they make the right decision? Of course, we don't know, but in your opinion, is this strange, like some people seem to think online, or is this something common and this could work?
Well, there are strange aspects of it. I mean, there's definitely a strange aspect of two things. One, waiting this long just to promote internal, right? Especially if that's true, that it's like, you know, hey, this is what Flores really wants. Then it looks like the Senior Bowl really was sort of a proof of concept that this could work. And that's weird. You know, that's, I'll say it out there. That's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a strange aspect of it. Calling them and keep in mind, the Dolphins have made no announcement, right? So no announcement. So we're going on virtual, you know, I'm not saying nothing, but I mean, and I won't say rumor either, because that would be disrespectful to the people that are doing the fine reporting on it. But we've got no real announcement from them. So the language, everybody's parsing the language, this co-coordinator thing, and
yeah,
you know, everybody gets really, really uppity about that. If it was co-coordinator and not run coordinator, pass coordinator, that would be a little odd. That doesn't happen. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that's not that often. Is it odd for it to be a committee? No, not in any way, shape, or form. This is all over the place in football. It's all over the place in the NFL. It's all over the place in college. It's all over the place now in high school. I was reading a piece penned by a coach. This was back in like 2016, right? And he said that he had been a big, you know, disbeliever in the idea of having the co-coordinator situation, having the pass coordinator and run coordinator. And then he had the light turn on, and he started doing it and realized that by breaking up the workloads in that way, you could put more work into the different aspects of the game. And that's, I think that's ultimately what it's about. I think it's more work into the situational aspects of the game, more work into the different kinds of plays. And that's what the committee approach is about. And there's nothing strange about the idea of it being a committee at all. You know, it happens all over the place. The thing that is strange is, you know, we'll see what the actual structure is, who's play caller, who's got the final say, if anybody has the final say. What is a little bit strange is when you see these sorts of committee approaches, there's usually an offensive minded head coach. There's usually an Andy Reid, a Kyle Shanahan, a Sean McVay, a Matt LaFleur,
Bruce Arians, or
Bruce Arians. You know, when you see that, there's that guy kind of with the final say on everything, keeping you tight to the vision. And that's not present here. Although, you know, Flores himself might be getting more involved in the offense too. So we got to keep that in mind. And he does have the final say to keep tight to the vision. So, and I don't buy any of this crap about, oh, he's a defensive guy. Well, listen, if you're a defensive guy and you've been spending your career
looking at offenses,
if you're a defensive guy, you probably spend more time looking at offenses than offensive guys.
Yeah, like so. I don't understand that at all. And I saw it on Twitter at all hours this past week, and I made fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Which is, you know, I don't buy this idea that Brian Flores sees that his team has the ball and he starts drooling on himself, not knowing what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, let's be honest about that. I mean, he probably knows what he wants out of the offense. He's probably communicated that. And this is probably helped in his mind. This is helping him carry out his vision. Whereas maybe an old hat like Chan Gailey, you know, he has his own ways of doing things. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But he has his own ways of doing things. And so maybe Brian Flores will be that authority. I don't know, but that's the difference here. Like, we don't have a Bruce Arians. We don't have a Kyle Shanahan. We don't have, you know, it'd be great, though. It'd be great if we did. I understand that. But the issue isn't the committee approach. The issue is just that we have George Godsey and Eric Studsville and not Bruce Arians. Like, that's the issue. If Studsville and or Godsey are destined to become the next Bruce Arians or the next, you know, Kyle Shanahan or Matt LaFleur, or, you know, one of those guys, then this is going to work great. This is going to be awesome. Like, you know, that's it. But if they're not, if they're just not all that good, then it's going to be shit. You know, it's not going to look that great. And eventually they'll get fired and we'll be replacing. And that's the way it works. I mean, the average coordinator hire in the NFL ends in disaster. I mean, these guys have a half-life of like 2 years. I said it on Twitter. I mean, let's be honest. And it's not necessarily just because the head coach gets switched out. The coordinators get switched out before the head coach. That's the first of all is the coordinators. And then the head coach goes after that because, you know, it goes up the chain. So yeah, I mean, most coordinator hires, no matter how excited you are about it, you're like, yeah, 75% chance this is going to be done in 3-4 years. And that's reality. That's just reality.
Yeah. You know what is also reality? If these guys, and I'll go out and look, the date is February 3rd of 2021. If the Dolphins have a top 10 offense, I wouldn't be shocked if Eric Studsville becomes head coach of, you know, I don't know, whatever blank state in college.
Sure. You know what I mean? I think so. I think that's a strong problem. You know, and part of me actually wondered if this co-coordinator thing sticks, like if that's when they announce it and it's official and all that stuff, whatever. I wonder if this is about finding a loophole that prevents them from being able to be hired as offensive coordinators.
That is interesting,
because like there's a rule now. The NFL put out a rule that the teams can no longer block their assistants from a promotion. So, and that would include like a pass coordinator being promoted to offensive coordinator. That's a promotion. So if these guys are co-offensive coordinators, I wonder if that prevents either of them from being hired offensive coordinator somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I completely agree. And we got this question, and I'm going to answer it for him because, you know, he filled out the question, and it seemed like he took time to think this through. And he asks, and I think it's a really good one, too. And it's Jake's at LlamaFace120. I don't know what that means. But he asked a question for the podcast. Where does play calling rank in the hierarchy of OC responsibilities? How important is being a good play caller? And simultaneously, how good can an offense be if the play calling is fine, but nothing special? Well, I don't understand about that last part of it. But I'll take this and then you could expand on it if you want. And this is not to disparage, you know, the maestros that you're going to see on Sunday because, you know, Bruce Arians and that whole group in Tampa Bay and, of course, that group in Kansas City, you know, like what they call usually looks, you know, it looks beautiful. It flows. It has a rhythm to it. But you know what it also has Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. You know, Rob Gronkowski in his second life, you know, Chris Godwin. You see what I'm getting at? All right. So not to disparage any of these guys that are great play callers, but if you are a reasonably good competitive Madden player, okay, and you have an idea of what rhythm is in play calling, you could probably be a good play caller. The important part, I think, for an OC is what happens Monday and Tuesday. On Monday, you're reviewing the All 22 from Sunday, and you're saying to yourself, okay, we could have done this differently. I know I called this here, but maybe we could have called this. Let me go over the tendencies. Let me see if I screwed any of that up. Okay, I didn't. All right, who are we playing this weekend? We're playing the Carolina Panthers. Okay. All right, what do they like to do on first down? What do they like to do on second down? What does third and 10 look like for them on defense? You know, do they bring pressures? How often do they bring pressures? Okay, here's my playbook. My playbook has 400 plays in it with five variations, so I guess we got 2,000 plays. Let me sit down with my coaches Tuesday morning. We got to start building this game plan for the Carolina Panthers. Okay, I need 80 plays. We need 80 plays for this Sunday, the right 80 plays. And now we have Tuesday through Friday. You're implementing those 80 plays and you're talking to your quarterback, talking to your wide receivers, the offensive line, getting everybody on the same page. And then it's the execution of those 80 plays on Sunday. Now, if you're somebody, you know, if you're just weird in play calling, that's another thing, you know. But I believe, you know, Tuesday through Saturday is more important than the actual play calling on Sunday. Your thoughts?
I think the play calling is crucial. I'm going to take the other side of this one. And okay. I think the play calling on Sunday is a big deal. I think it's as much of a performance as any of the performances on the football field. And that's what it is. It is a performance. And there's a skill to it. And there's a feel to the game. Listen, all these guys in the NFL are mostly running the same place. I mean, that's just a fact. That's part of what Miami's doing is, you know, per Ian Rappaport, you know, he tried to make sure that we're not forgetting Charlie Fry in this because, you know, he thinks that what the Dolphins are doing is taking a lot of input from Charlie Fry into what they're doing and implementing a lot of college stuff. And that's what, I mean, he really emphasized that. And I think it would be remiss of us to just forget, gloss over that. All these guys in the NFL are mostly running the same shit. I mean, they really are. And that's just a fact. So it's not necessarily what you're calling. It's when you're calling it, you know, it's when you're calling. Kyle Shanahan is not, his offenses don't work because they, you know, because these are plays that you've never seen before, right? And his offenses work because of the rhythm he establishes and how much he can make, you know, one play look like the other and he can hit you this way, force you to start adjusting to it, and then hit you the other way, getting into that rhythm. I mean, that's what the play caller does. When they're successful. Now, to your point, if you show up to the game and you prepared for defense that you just aren't, the Denver game, like in my for the Miami Dolphins this year, you show up and the defense is doing something you didn't prepare for, then there's no getting into rhythm.
No,
you know, there's no way to get into rhythm until you simplify everything and get them, you know, not, if you go hurry up, you take away their ability to sub, right? Mm-hmm. And then they got to line up and they got to make their play calls a little bit more simplified. And then, then you can get into rhythm. That's why that often works, is because you can get into rhythm. You start being able to predict more of what the defense is doing play to play. Because you limit their options, I think, when you start to go no huddle, you start to keep them on the field and don't allow them to sub and everything. But yeah, you can't get into rhythm if you didn't plan right. So it's crucial to plan right. I'm not taking that away. But I also think that the performance on Sunday is a big deal. It's a big deal. And I think that, watching a coach clinic from Steve Sarkisian, and he was talking about that too. It's a pretty big deal, you know, cause they, in Alabama, they build their offense off the foundation is the run. And if you give them a 7-man box, they're going to run it down your throat. And that's the kind of team that they are. So then they build the RPOs off of the run, and the RPOs are basically opportunistic passes. Like if you have this sort of spacing, we're just going to take this from you. You know, that's the idea of the RPO is, you know, if your guy lines up here, we're just going to take that that free yardage from you via the pass. But then they build in the play pass, you know, the play fakes and the play action, and they make the play action look and smell exactly like an RPO. Mm-hmm. And then they start working. Okay, well, now you're doing play action, and so that takes a long time, and your guys have to hold their blocks a little bit longer. Well, what about just doing dropbacks, you know, drop back passes.
Yeah,
to help out the quarterback. And all this is built, you know, foundationally, but it's also built foundationally during the football game. It's not just built in install. It's built during the football game with the play calling. And I think that's pretty crucial. And also one last note. Mm-hmm. Just one last point on this. Shane Steichen of the Los Angeles Chargers. How crucial can play calling be? He made a mistake and called in a run play, like with seconds left on the clock and no timeouts. And they were, you know, in I think it was in field goal range or something, like it was one of those egregiously bad calls. And what's his name? The coach, Anthony Lynn, I guess he wasn't monitoring. He just lets his offensive coordinator do his thing. But Steichen just brain farted and called in a run play because he just didn't, he wasn't aware. He wasn't aware. And they lost the game because of that. It can be crucial. If you got a first year play caller and there's all kinds of things buzzing around his head and there's all this information coming in from all these different places, I mean, you got to manage it. And it's got to be hard. So it, you know, again, I emphasize the performance aspect of it.
Yeah, and it, just to be clear, in case people think that these guys are going to put on a headset for the first time, for their entire careers, they've heard the play call because Studsville has been a running backs coach, and the running backs coach has to hear the play call to understand which personnel grouping is in. So he has to know which running back he's sending in for every play. And Godsey has been a quarterbacks coach. So,
and he's been a play caller too.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was also OC for the Texans, right? For 1 year.
Yeah. He was OC for the Texans. He was play caller for a year and then a couple of games. And then Bill O'Brien took the play calling back. Bill O'Brien, you know, he's one of those guys that holds on to the play calling for dear life. And he was convinced to give it to Godsey. And then he took it back partway through the 2016 season, and then he didn't give it up again until very recently, actually.
Yeah.
This last year, I think. Gotsy has called plays before. You know, we can argue about how good it was or whatever, but yeah, he's done it before. Studsville, as far as I know, has not. Interestingly enough, Charlie Fry has. You know, Charlie Fry was a accomplished play caller and an offensive coordinator up in Central Michigan. So,
but yeah, I tend to agree that the sequency is really important. But I will say this: a lot of times this year, and execution above all else, a lot of times this year, Chan Gailey would even he called some things that were kind of odd for the down and distance, and you know how many times I saw things pop. And they just didn't execute it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, players above all else. I even think that even some weird play calling, if you have really good players, they can make something like that work.
Mm.
You know, but I agree with you. It is an art because, in my opinion, and I know people are going to say, well, you know, the Dolphins smashed this offense. But Sean McVay, his all-22 stuff is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. He'll run stuff that looks completely one way in the first quarter. Right. And it's an outside zone run. Right. Then he'll run the same exact formation at the same part of the field on the same hash mark. OK. And you're thinking to yourself, well, he's running the exact same thing. Right. No. And it's something completely opposite. It's a bootleg. It's a play action pass. You know, so he's always setting things up by making things look the same. So, yeah, it is an art. Absolutely. I would agree with that. But I think the planning stages, because like you said, the Denver game, like I think that game was lost when they walked onto the field. Yeah. And how stale did they look against the Raiders as well? That was another game where they walked onto the field and, well, before the game, it looked like they were trying to figure out what the hell Rob Marinelli was going to do.
Yep.
But that was a game that started and it looked like they had no clue. They had no clue what they were doing. You know, so yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that works. But moving on, we had the Senior Bowl, and we have a lot of opinions. We already saw the game, and who was the MVP? Oh yeah, it was the quarterback, right? Kellen Mond. Okay, he was the MVP.
Even though he lost.
Yeah, Michael Carter had a shot. Dez Fitzpatrick as well. But overall thoughts, and I guess we could start with the offensive lineman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know,
definitely.
If we're going to talk tea leaves, they coached Creed Humphrey, okay? I thought he had a spectacular Senior Bowl game, okay? He played very, very well. There's a couple of complaints that we will get to in a second. But if we're going to talk tea leaves, the Dolphins coaching staff was really hands-on with Robert Hainsey all week and played him – all along the interior. And
were they handsy with handsy?
Yeah, they were handsy with handsy. Okay. Now, I think this suggests something, right? It suggests like they're looking at center and they're saying, you know what? An upgrade could be done there.
Yeah, but he's not a center. That's important to it's important to realize. They had him play at center some during the week. But, I mean, he was playing right tackle at Notre Dame. You know, so he's one of those guys – If you really look at how he was used throughout the week, he did take some center snaps, and he was surprising. Like I noticed him because he was taking center snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was something, and he looked good. I mean, he looked good there. But he's the guy that they had literally playing 4 out of the 5 positions during the week, during the practice week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had them specifically at each of the 4 positions I saw them. So that's what they're attracted to. I mean, he's a team captain. You know, he's the he was Notre Dame's offensive lineman of the year in 2019. You know, it's just he's their kind of guy, definitely, because of the versatility and the accolades and the leadership and all that. But I don't know if he is definitely a center. He might be, but it's not necessarily where he's got the most experience, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Now on Creed Humphrey, we had a back and forth on the WhatsApp chat, and I guess I'll you know, I'll rehash it here for our listeners so they could hear it. I thought he was great. I thought he was good all week, although, you know, he might have been outshined a little bit by Hainsey, I thought, and by Quinn Miners. But that game, I wouldn't call it a coming out party because he came out a while ago, but I thought it was a statement like, hey, you know, I'm center one and nobody else is particularly close right now. I thought he played a great game. My only complaint is the one that I told you, which is way too often he looks like he stops playing and he says, look, my work is done. The ball should be gone by now. While the defensive line is chasing somebody down to the sideline or worse, getting after your quarterback. He too often just stops playing because he thinks, okay, you know, this is enough. My work is done here. You told me that'll change in the NFL. What were your other thoughts about Creed Humphrey? Because this is a guy that for weeks, if not months, people were penciling in at number 18. Mm-hmm. So thoughts, and did he hurt that status? Is he still a first round pick?
I think that thing that you talk about, you know, not necessarily playing through the whistle. This is the sort of thing that people see and they sort of isolate and they criticize and I get it. But then it completely changes at the NFL. I mean, it just does. It's sort of like when these running backs show up to Senior Bowl week and they go into the one-on-one drills trying to pass block and mm-hmm. they look like fucking nincompoops. I mean, they look awful. And it's because they've not been taught anything and the drills themselves kind of really favor the blitzer anyway, but they look like they have no idea what they're doing, and then they get to the NFL and get some coaching, they look like friggin' Frank Gore all of a sudden. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, it really is. So this is one of those things that's like low on the list for me as far as like impacting what I think of a guy. Yeah, you could say that he went out there and had a good game and it was a statement, you know, I'm the best center in the game, and he was the best center in the game because Quinn Miners didn't play. You know, that's the criticism about him, because when you're Creed Humphrey and you played 37 games and you've been one of the best centers in the entire NCAA for years, really multiple years, you're not supposed to go to the Senior Bowl and get shown up by a converted guard from Wisconsin Whitewater who learned to block by hitting trees in the Canadian wilderness. You know, you're just,
which
you're
is not a great, what a great bio.
Yeah. I mean, you're just not, that's just not supposed to happen. Right. And yeah. he did, he got outshone by Miners in the practices. And that's, you know, Miners went out there, showed that he wanted it more. I mean, he was higher energy. He was, you know, he was doing better, just period. And I think that's something. It's not that your stock will drop as a Creed Humphrey because of that, but he didn't improve his stock, I don't think. And that's because he already had pretty high standing. So furthermore, if you really look at the back view on the practice tapes, there are definitely zone systems in the NFL that are getting more popular now as more of the Shanahan ilk, you know, kind of go somewhere else. Those zone zealots are not going to take them, you know, period. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, he can't get to the other side of he could barely get to the other side of a one tack, and he's never going to get to the other side of a three tack. You know, and that's just a reality for Creed Humphrey. He will fit every other offense in the league, including the Miami Dolphins offense. So he's front and center for the Dolphins, but I think there's definitely, you know, those zone zealot teams are going to fight. They're going to fight each other over Drew Dalman out of Stanford, or they may even try and, you know, start asking Dylan Raddins of North Dakota State how he feels about snapping the ball. But the Dolphins will be looking at Creed Humphrey. You know why? Because they need a center right now. They don't need a center for a year from now, right? They don't need the guard from Wisconsin Whitewater who converted to center and showed that his tree blocking, you know, really showed out in All-Star week. I mean, they're still, make no mistake, All-Star week aside, he's going to have a learning curve, right? He's going to have a learning curve. And a lot of these guys that you're talking about, like Hanzy, might have a learning curve. They need a guy that had the 37 starts and that's been one of the best centers in college football for years.
Yeah.
And that's Creed Humphrey. They're not running one of those outside zone systems that to where they'll say, you know, Creed doesn't fit this. So I think the Dolphins will be looking, and actually he's the guy I keep telling people, aside from, you know, like Devonta Smith and Najee Harris were technically on the Dolphins squad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those guys are probably most likely to be end up on the Dolphins. But other than them, Creed Humphrey is actually probably the most likely player to end up on the Dolphins from the national squad.
Yeah, and I would say if history is any indicator, he's a first-round pick. Somebody will think, you know, I'm not waiting to the second round for him. Is this right?
I'm going to agree with you, but only because of the budget cuts this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think his stock is heading there. I thought it was, you know, heading into this process. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's heading there anymore in a vacuum, being a first round pick. I think it will happen this year because budgets and salary caps are being slashed by $22 million across the board. It's nearly $1 billion being bled out of NFL budgets. And so a lot of teams out there, there's like, you know, more than half the teams out there are above the salary cap and have to cut a significant amount of players just to even have enough to sign their draft picks. And so there's what that translates to is a lot of these teams need players that they can start immediately. And Creed Humphrey is probably the most plug and play center in the draft, the most, you know, the safest, most plug and play center in the draft. And because of that, you know, teams that are forced to lop off a center because they're $100 million over the salary cap, they're gonna be targeting guys like that, like Creed, and saying, you know, here's the position,
run with it. Yeah, there's been years where I've watched the Senior Bowl, and usually after the Senior Bowl is when I make my opinion. You know, I get an opinion of what this draft class kind of looks like, and there's been years where I've looked at it and I've said, you know, I wouldn't mind trading our first round pick for an established player. This is one of those years where I wish we had more first round picks, and we already have two of them. Because I looked at that wide receiver core, man, it goes deeper than Devonta Smith. There's so many good players. Amari Rodgers, I thought, had a great week. And not only did he have a great week, but I remember watching Deebo Samuel and saying to myself, you know what? I don't know, man. Like, you know, does this running back at wide receiver thing actually really work? You know? Mm-hmm. Well, it does. Okay. All right, it works. If Deebo Samuel's any indication, yeah, it works. I think this is a do-over on Deebo Samuel. If somebody passed on him a couple of years ago, well, you know, Amari Rodgers, I think, is a facsimile thereof. I think he's really, really close.
Yeah, I think
I loved his work this week. I loved his game, and of course, you know, I liked everything he's done. You know, at Clemson, so
you know, I think he's the perfect slot.
Absolutely.
I think he's built to be the perfect slot. And the reason I say that, you know, a lot of people, they see a guy that's not too fast and has, you know, quicker than fast and, you know, maybe smart player, tough, you know, and they're like, okay, he's slot. He has pluses that go. And I think anybody to be a really special slot player, you have to have pluses that go above and beyond, right? Mm-hmm. You either got to have the speed to really actually challenge somebody, or you got to have unusual, you know, physicality and toughness. And And I think that he's 5'9" and 211 pounds. This is like almost like, I mean, it's not quite Maurice Jones-Drew at like 5'7" and 207 pounds, but I mean, it's kind of close, you know. I mean, so it's that kind of player. It's that kind of player at slot. And he also, I think he has legitimate speed.
Yeah.
I think he's got plus speed. And you watch him in the one-on-one drills, and he's definitely one of those guys. You could isolate a couple of these guys, these short striders. Shy Smith was one of these from South Carolina. You know, the short striders, quick guys, they get open for days and days and days in these one-on-one drills, you know, where they get to drag the defensive back around three-way go, you know.
But I like to see those guys run real routes though.
Yeah. Forget trying to cover this guy. And that Amari Rodgers was like that. And that's great. That's mm-hmm. one part of the story. Maybe not even the most important part of the story. But it's the toughness. It's the toughness at 5'9" 211 pounds to catch those balls over the middle, take the shot, take the hit. And then also, you know, do some work with strength after the catch. And he mixes in. I mean, this is what he did at Clemson, right? He was the jet sweep kind of guy. You know, he was that guy, right? You know that guy. And so he really blends those two things. And then he's physical in terms of blocking. And that's surprisingly really important for a slot because you end up in position of really potentially impacting the play with your blocking, as opposed to some of the guys on the outside.
His blocking pops all over the place on Clemson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like he's so, one of the most important reasons why Clemson's offense is so good is because he can
put it all together though.
Those guys out. Yeah.
But put it all together though. Plus blocking, you know, plus toughness in terms of, you know, 5'9" 211 pounds. That's a great profile, right?
Yes.
In terms of muscle mass and everything, great toughness, plus toughness, plus blocking, plus quickness, the kind of quickness that you expect from a slot, ball carrying that you kind of expect from a jet sweep kind of guy. And then potentially, we'll see, but I think you might have plus speed. And so add that all together. It's basically the perfect slot.
So. I did a like not an official mock draft, but I just started like, you know, okay, I think this could happen and that could happen and this could happen. I ended up with Amari Rodgers going 32 to the Kansas City Chiefs. Does that seem right? Is this the guy we could hunt in the second round?
I think we might be able to hunt him in the second round. He fits. Okay. So keep in mind though, he's T. Martin's kid, by the way. I didn't know that until recently, so shame on me.
Which is another plus.
Yeah, that's another plus. You know, you always like to see the bloodlines, but not only bloodlines, but how he was raised. It's being in a football family. It's
absolutely.
You know, it's experience that goes back to a very long way. That's why it's attractive. I think that, you know, he could go in the second round, but he's also one of these guys that. As I said, if the theme becomes I need a guy that's going to play immediately because I just had to cut guys that you know I didn't want to cut because my budget came in $22 million less, if that's the theme, then he's going to benefit from that. So we'll see where he goes, but I think he was a big standout, big winner. In Mobile, and yeah, it was pretty obvious.
All right, other wide receivers that stood out to you? To me, I'll give you a couple. Of course, Dwayne Eskridge, you know, he looked great all week, but to me, Des Fitzpatrick popped. I thought Sage Surratt looked good all week, and Shy Smith really, you know, is a guy that I looked at and I said, man, this is a professional wide receiver. What did you see?
I agree with you on Des Fitzpatrick. I mean, he's got the length at 6'2", and he moves like he has sort of he has some shake to him, you know, for a 6'2" guy, he's got some shake, and so he gets open, and that's what you see in Louisville. I mean, they use Tutu Atwell to keep defenses honest on the outsides and let, you know, Des Fitzpatrick and other receivers on the outside, you know, really just go one-on-one and get open. And that's what he does. He gets open. He caught as many balls this year, I think, as Tutu Atwell, who's another guy, you know, we can talk about. That's a really good player, but yeah. So he stood out because of that, but he also had like kind of the fuck upness, I think, in his game. And, you know, that's something that the players grow out of sometimes. So, you know, keep an eye on that. But I think Dwayne Eskridge, I don't want to gloss over what he did, because his speed and his one cut ability, you know, one step, one cut suddenness were uncoverable.
He was doing an Antonio Brown impersonation. He really
it was ridiculous. And he's got like, we're talking like 4.30 type of speed.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, you watch him when you see a guy on like a hitch or a curl or something like that. And, you know, always when you're coming back to the quarterback and the ball's coming in, you got the ball coming in. Well, you've got, if you're open, you still got a defensive back closing out on your back and usually you're tackled right away. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's so goddamn fast. He catches that, comes back a little bit. The guy can't tackle him. And then he just outruns him all the way to the fucking end zone.
He's so fast that every guy who covers him forgets to stay in their back pedal and gets out of it immediately.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of getting even with him, because they know if they get even with him, he's running past them.
And I compared him to Tutu Atwell as well as Jaylen Waddle. And they're kind of all in the same category because they all kind of have that speed, that same speed, which is just not just fast, but like super fast. And they're all slots. They're all jet sweep guys, potentially jet sweep guys. Although Dwayne Eskridge doesn't have much experience. Of those three, though, it's interesting that Dwayne has probably the most experience on the outside of any of them, you know, and, you know, most experience running kind of what you would call real routes of any of those guys. And so I think that he's going to be really attractive to teams. I don't want to gloss over him. The other guy, I mean, the Dolphins got to coach Demetric Felton. Mm-hmm. And he's got big speed. He's got big quickness. He's got like the potential to be that sort of Dwayne Eskridge type player when he learns. I mean, he's a running back to wide receiver convert. When he learns a little bit more of it, I saw just, this is my eye and your mileage may vary. I saw wasted steps and wasted movement, you know, and mm-hmm. It kind of didn't let him be as dangerous as he could have been. But once he gets it, you know, I think he's going to have physicality because he's a former running back. So
yeah, Demetric Felton has one major problem coming off the line. He drops his head all the time. And I think, I don't know if that's a running back thing. And now he's playing wide receiver, but you got to make eye contact with the guy in front of you. You got to keep your head up.
That's another thing these guys often don't even know how to do, like coming out of college, like is get off the line sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, get off the press. And so they're going to be taught whether they can do it or not, but he's got it's the quick guys. I don't really worry about the quick, fast guys. Those are the guys that are going to get off the line at the next mm-hmm. one. It's the big dudes that you're like, oh, he's so big and strong, of course he'll get off the line. No, they're huge fucking targets. That's that's why they don't get off the line. They don't get off the line because it's easy to hit them. I mean, it's like throwing a dartboard at a barn. I mean, it's like, or a dart at a barn. I mean, it's like, you know, the big guys are just easier targets. And that's why actually I don't buy this thing about Ja'Marr Chase getting off the line versus a Devonta Smith, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I don't buy it either.
So yeah, Demetric Felton. I mean, look at that touchdown though that he got in the game.
Yeah,
just look at that touchdown.
And then DJ Daniel, of all people, a guy who has some chops.
think about Miami's coaches and what they love and what they weren't doing enough of this year as far as scoring touchdowns in the red zone. I mean, that they probably had to be drooling all over that, that touchdown. And plus they're in search of this kind of guy. They really are. I mean, they traded for what's his face? Lynn Bowden. They, you know, they took Malcolm Perry in the draft. I mean, they extended Jakeem Grant last year. You know, they worked with Albert Hill or Albert Wilson to keep him here. I mean, he ended up sitting out because of the COVID, you know, thing, but they worked with him on a contract to keep him here. I mean, they're in search of this kind of guy. They supposedly, you know, had a hard on for Brandon Ayuk. So they want this type of dude. And so they had to be seeing Demetric Felton and even, you know, as a different player, as a running back, even Michael Carter, they had to be looking at those guys and just being like, oh, you know, like that's just their thing. It's their, it's their jam.
Yeah. And let me repeat that stat again, you know, so people can, you know, remember this. Okay. And this was a huge problem with this team this year. In their 24 touchdown passes, they had 87 yards of yak. Okay? Mm-hmm. 24 touchdown passes, 87 yards of yak. 52 of them came on one play. That's a problem.
Right. The Gaskin play.
Yes.
And that was really just a block, right? That was just a great block on the outside.
It was a great block by Matt Collins, and then goodbye. You know what I mean?
And then goodbye.
Like, that's a problem, okay? Yeah. Especially when you have Kansas City on Patrick Mahomes' 5,000 touchdown passes. Go look at those numbers, all right? You're talking about 700, 800 yards of yak. That's real, okay? Yeah. That's a threat. No, not what we were doing.
You know? So you're going to be looking at guys that can get who are the guys that can get yak? Well, I mean, DeVonta Smith had more yak than anybody in college football
by
over 500 yards.
Yes.
By a long distance too. So, but then you look at a Demetric Felton form, you know, running back convert. You look at somebody, look at what Dwayne Eskridge, really go watch his Western Michigan. Look at what he does after the catch because of his speed and quickness. I mean, it's insane. Watch Tutu Atwell at Louisville, what he does with the ball in his hands, and this kind of, the sort of speed that he can use to his advantage. This is the type of player they're going to want, and to fix that.
Yeah. And let me say this, I've been going to practices for, you know, for 4,000 years, not to date myself, you know what I mean? But it's been a while. Okay. And I watch every single wide receivers coach, you know, from Carl Durrell to, you name it, and they all say the same thing. They all tell their guys the same thing. A cornerback puts their hands on you in the first 5 yards of your release, you break his fingers, and everybody looks at him, and some guys are kind of shy to be physical, you know, with guys in practice. Go watch Dwayne Eskridge. He literally tries to break your fingers if you try to get your hands on him to open a route. He doesn't let you try to steer him with your hands, okay?
You know, he was a corner.
So he knows.
He played corner. He knows.
Yeah, and trust me when I tell you that these wide receivers coaches tell you that, they tell these wide receivers that, to see who is shy enough to not do it in practice. And those are the guys that you don't want. Okay? Not, you know, to be blunt about it. You want the guys that do things like Dwayne Eskridge, okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's you know, it's obvious. Okay, that's obvious.
I'm going to have a tough time. I'm honestly going to have a tough time with Dwayne Eskridge and Tutu Atwell, because I really appreciate what Tutu's speed can do on the field. But also Eskridge has that kind of speed. And this goes back to the reason that I have Devonta Smith over Jamar Chase. It's about the resume. And Tutu wasn't allowed to be there, you know, at the Senior Bowl. But what Dwayne Eskridge did at the Senior Bowl mattered. And and that's so I, you know, I'm kind of getting there that, like, I'm going to put him above, you know, and I didn't think I would, but that's, you know, that's the way it goes.
A lot of Antonio Brown there. If you watch him, a lot of Antonio Brown. It just looked good.
But with, you know, imagine if Antonio didn't. Antonio doesn't have like 4.3 speed, right?
No, but he's sub 4.5.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know, which is, you know, which is fast.
But you know what? I think getting back to the offensive line, I thought there were several guys. You know, I thought I thought Dylan Raddins was voted. He was the best practice player of the week. You know, the award that Justin Herbert got last year. Came from North Dakota State. You knew he was. Two things you knew at North Dakota State, because you can measure these things sort of in a vacuum. It doesn't matter who you're going against. You knew he was mobile. You knew he could move. Yeah, you know, because you don't need to. You don't, if you have a good enough eye for it. But I mean, if you can see the speed, I mean, you can see the explosiveness, the lateral explosiveness off the snap and stuff like that. So you knew that. You knew he had this really beastly feisty mentality, that he's out there to dominate people. But what you couldn't really know is the strength, because he's facing all these guys from the FCS. So he shows up at the Senior Bowl, and now he's going against strong dudes, right? You know, these are some of the best players in college football. And the strength held up, it more than held up. And I think that's such a big puzzle piece to fit in there, that he is going in the first round, and that's, you know, maybe that wasn't happening before, maybe it was, I don't know, but he's going in the first round. He looks spitting image of Joe Staley, and Joe Staley is actually training him, which I just found out, which is kind of interesting. So he's a huge stand up. If the Dolphins are looking, I mean, I think you can put him in at left tackle over Austin Jackson. I would put him in there over Austin Jackson. You know, you'd think about moving Austin Jackson maybe to the right side and having Robert Hunt move inside. I mean, you could really think about that. That's a genuine possibility. Another guy that may interest them and may not, I don't know what they're going to think of him. Spencer Brown of UNI, Northern Illinois. He's 6'8" and a half and 315 pounds. So you look at him next to people, he looks like Ivan Drago. I mean, he's like, you know, he's just massive dude. And there've been guys like that before that, you know, aren't too good. The difference with him is that he has really good, really, really good knee bend. And that's what these guys that are that big, often lack.
Oh yeah. He popped all week on the one-on-one drills. Yeah.
He doesn't quite know what he's doing yet. And you probably wouldn't expect him to,
but he was swallowing up guys that were trying to come up.
Yeah. He has the ability to swallow up dudes. He gets, you know, if he places this, if he gets a little bit too far back, or, you know, he gets a little bit too perpendicular shoulder pads to the line of scrimmage, and, you know, and then he can get beat to the inside or something like that. You know,
yeah, he gets off the stool, like they like to say.
Yeah. These are the things that, you know, he's going to learn. He's going to learn better feel for it in the NFL, but you're looking for guys that are going to go to the NFL and not in any way be intimidated by the fact that these guys are much bigger and stronger and faster. And this is a guy like that. This is a guy, he's going to get to the NFL and he's like, oh, these are my people, you know, like, and that's because that's what it is. I mean, really. And so he has great knee bend, really good mobility. I mean, there's some highlight reels. You can look up highlight reels of him, I think. And you can see him. I mean, I think he's a rare combo. I think he looked a lot like Sebastian Vollmer. You know, back in the New England Patriots. And so I'd really take a look at him. And then the other guy, Aaron Banks, was probably the best guard in Mobile. I think he might have leapfrogged. I mean, Trey Smith's medical issues probably were going to have him sink like a stone anyway, but you know, in terms of even just who's better, I think Aaron Banks might've gotten above him of Notre Dame. And also, you know, I think he had a rapport with Lemuel Jean-Pierre, he's a smart dude. So I'd keep an eye on him. I'd keep an eye on, you know, obviously Hansey. and Miners. I mean, God, Flores is, he's such a Flores guy, right?
Well, if we're going to talk about a guy, and I guess we could move off the offensive line with this and move on to other positions, probably positions that are not of need, but of opportunity. Mm-hmm. If we're going to talk about a guy that Flores took a liking to, Damar Hamlin of Pittsburgh, safety. All week, from day one, he had him call the secondary splits, and then he had him call him in the game, all mm-hmm. game. And then, of course, he gets an interception, and then the first time you see him come off the field, there's Brian Flores high-fiving mm-hmm. him and smiling ear to ear.
Yep.
There's something there, right?
There's definitely something there. Definitely.
There's something there.
And he's a lengthy guy. Like, he's uh-huh. a light. And this is something we're probably missing on that back end as far as, like, Bobby McCain's position. Mm-hmm. Damar Hamlin is a lengthy dude. And I think that can be important. John Johnson comes to mind as a guy that's back there. That's in that same kind of role and his length, relative to his height, really helps him out. And I think that, I think what you said is right on. Brian Flores was all over this guy. And I do think it's a position of need. I think that mm-hmm. because of the budget crunch, they might even have to look at doing something with Bobby McCain. I mean, there's a reason Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald was writing about the safety position and writing about, possibly saving cap space by cutting Bobby McCain and maybe getting a new safety or something. I think Brian Flores is looking for new blood there. Mm. And Damar Hamlin would fit really, really perfectly.
Mm. I agree. And if we're talking about Bobby McCain, how about, to me, he looked like his clone. Trey Brown, I thought, had a great week. Well, you didn't see him in the game. I don't know if he even played, to be honest with you.
No,
he was good all week. Trey Brown of Oklahoma corner.
He was head and shoulders above everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Even Keith Taylor. Maybe not head and shoulders above Keith Taylor because he was really good. But, yeah,
he didn't have the PR staff that Richie Grant had all week.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Richie Grant was good. He had a great presence all week.
Yes, he did.
Not taking anything away from him. And I think
he looks great. He's lengthy, long, lean.
Yeah, I think Brian Flores would naturally be attracted to him in the same way that he'd be attracted to Bobby McCain. Yeah. So not taking nothing away from there. Trey Brown as a corner, Keith Taylor and Trey Brown were – together, let's say that together, they're together head and shoulders above everybody else at corner to me in the drills. I mean, just in what they were doing out there mm-hmm. and what they were able to do, he was unassailable. Trey Brown was, and that's really hard to do in those one-on-ones. I'm telling you, like that is not easy. The one-on-ones are geared for the wide receiver.
Absolutely.
Win.
That's what I look for. If I see a corner that's yeah. competing, then I say, okay, what's the competition like? Okay.
Yeah.
That's Fitzpatrick on the other side. Okay. Yeah. This guy can play.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking for, you really are looking for like nuances, things in there and not just, oh, he caught the ball or, he gave up the catch or something like that. You really are looking for, cause it's so geared toward the wide receiver. It's kind of ridiculous.
And
so,
truth be told, a lot of these wide receivers, they're just cheating out there. Like some of those rocks don't exist.
Yeah. They make them up as they go.
Yeah.
And I've heard coaches on the, sitting on the sidelines of these all-stars. I think I said this on another podcast. I've heard coaches be like, he just made that one up as he went. That's a win for you. There ain't no route like that. Like he just yeah. started making it up.
Yeah. There's no time to run some of those routes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, I think that can be a win for those guys, but yeah, Trey Brown, definitely, he was a huge standout among the corners. Is Miami going to go there though? Is Miami going to go for another corner after they just got Igbinoghene? I don't think they're giving up on Igbinoghene at all.
No,
Not at all. And I don't think they're going to end up losing Xavien Howard. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that they're probably going to – DeMar Hamlin, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Richie Grant, yeah.
Yeah.
Trey Brown, Keith Taylor, probably not.
Yeah, but great just players. Those are good players.
Great players, though. Great yeah. players, though.
Absolutely. I don't know.
But on the defense, what about the defensive front, though?
Yeah. And that's where the two Pittsburgh guys are interesting to me, because if there was ever and we talked about this on the WhatsApp chat, but I noticed it right away. Like, I'm not going to say the consensus, but most scouts would say Patrick Jones, right? It's probably the better prospect. Rashad Weaver looks like a Dolphin to me, and Patrick Jones doesn't look at all like a Dolphin to me. I would say Rashad Weaver is probably a guy that they looked at, and especially the way that they played him all week. They looked at him, they said, you know what? Maybe this guy is somewhere around 122 and we can take him.
Possibly. They were forced to use these guys in this way this mm-hmm. week because, you know, the only true defensive tackle that they had on roster, I think, was Osa Odighizuwa.
Yeah.
And he's not even really a true defensive tackle. He's 280 pounds. I mean, and mm-hmm. he plays defensive end at times, and he plays inside at times. And, you know, and they had to have him at one tech all week. Like, that's their only guy.
Yeah. Poor Taron Jackson got abused by all those centers.
And so they're forcing all these guys to move inside. And I just thought Rashad Weaver was very up and down during the week. And, you know, there were times that it looked pretty good. And then there was times that he's like, you have no plan. Like, what are you doing out there? And so it was very up and down. The reason people are attracted to Patrick Jones, who, by the way, had one of the worst practice weeks of anybody.
Absolutely.
At any position. The reason people are attracted to him is he's more of the change of direction, agile, you know, lateral, scrappy kind of look to him. Whereas Rashad Weaver is probably a more linear looking guy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, some teams are just attracted to the one versus the other. They could be, if they're looking for length, though, Janarius Robinson has absolutely ludicrous length. I think he's like 36 inch arms or something like that. And just, you know, Ade Ogundeji of Notre Dame has great length and showed it. Ellerson Smith, we talked mm-hmm. about, looks exactly like Jason Taylor out there. He's got great, but he's 6'6" and a half, and he's 262 pounds or something like that. I mean,
yeah. And when you say that he looks like Jason Taylor, you know, right down to his first step, the use of his hands, how he gets off of the corner, how he throws the flipper. It's mm-hmm. all too familiar. It's
Jason Taylor. The only thing he doesn't do that it's just like, can somebody teach you that? I wonder is that, you know, dip around edge and come back up to the quarterback.
Yeah,
I haven't really seen that out of him, and that goes back to the UNI tape that I've watched of him. And some people will be like, "Oh, you can't even be a good defensive or a pass rush prospect if you can't do that." Well, maybe, because that's not as big a part of NFL pass rush as you think. As you tend to think. And so yeah, he's a real standout, but the best pass rusher, best defensive lineman of the week was Cam Sample of Tulane, of mm-hmm. any squad, either squad. Cam mm-hmm. Sample was the best defensive lineman, and I believe he was recognized as such. You know, he was definitely voted by his own squad as the best DL on his squad, and I thought I heard that he got voted as like the best DL period. From either squad, and he's 274 pounds. He's 274 pounds. He's built like a bigger Cam Wake, mm-hmm. and they used him. I mean, they even had to, because the way the roster was, they even had to use him at one technique, on his squad.
Yes,
and, which is weird, you know, right? Because this guy, if you watch him at Tulane, he's an outside linebacker. Like that's how they use him. Like the outside linebacker at Tulane, opposite the other guy that Simon really likes. I think it's something Johnson, Patrick Johnson, maybe. Yeah, Patrick Johnson. Patrick Johnson is a guy that Simon really likes. I started looking at Patrick Johnson. I was like, holy shit, who's the guy on the other side? And he's the outside linebacker on the other side. He's being used at one technique and doing fine. Like he's just, you know, yeah, I'm fine. And three technique, he's deadly. Three tech might have been his most dangerous position of the week at Senior Bowl, going up against guards. And then of course I you know, he can play on the outside. That's where he plays normally. He was a really strong, I mean, if you watched Tulane, you already knew he was pretty good, but he was, you know, you find out that he's this good. That's the difference.
Yeah, I completely agree. And one last thing, I don't know if you've seen the meme, but it happened in the movie also. When Yoda, he says there is another. Okay, Raekwon McMillan, Jerome Baker.
Yep.
Baron Browning.
So it seems. Baron Browning. I would tell people, because I've had Ohio State people come to me and they're like,
and by the way, we're talking about the linebacker, Ohio State.
Right. Linebacker, Ohio State. There's a reason Ohio State, by the way, all three of their linebackers in the Senior Bowl, all of them were on Brian Flores' squad. Mm-hmm. That's not a coincidence. You know, Jim Nagy and Brian Flores are friends, and there are connections between Brian Flores and Ohio State, and not just Ryan Day, you know, and so I'll leave it there. But yeah, there's a reason those guys were all out there. Baron Browning, the thing I would tell people that have been a little bit underwhelmed maybe by his stats or by, you know, what he's done, is go look at what he did and how he played it against Alabama. That's the kind of football player that I would want on my team at a linebacker position. And this is a need position. This is one of the right now need, like center, because mm-hmm. Alandon Roberts is a free agent, but Alandon Roberts also like tore something in his knee. I don't know if it ever officially came out. Well,
body parts were falling off of him in that race.
Yeah, game, I mean, so. Yeah, and so very, very late in the season, significant knee injury, immediately went on IR.
And significant shoulder injury too.
Yeah, and so he's beat up. You can't even if he weren't a free agent, I don't think you could count on him for next year. So I think this is a need now position, this linebacker position. And Baron Browning, you have to wonder, and maybe this was the purpose of Miami coaching them. Is he a guy that just steps right in and fills that Alandon Roberts role, you know, being ultra aggressive? But the thing that he's got that, you know, Alandon Roberts doesn't have is the length and the speed to be more. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of gives you. And so he's going to probably go higher than a lot of people think. And I wonder if Miami would be, you know, one of the teams after him.
Yeah. And he also wins the name Olympics. If the Divine Diablo didn't exist, yeah. Baron Browning would have the best name in the draft. The guy's named after a machine gun. Come on. All right. All right. Oh, by the way, I had it in my, I didn't want to say it just in case it wasn't true, but I had it in my notes when we were talking about Cam Sample. He had the best rep against Creed Humphrey in the Senior Bowl game.
That's true. Okay.
In a game.
Oh, in the game itself. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
That. Okay. In a game where nobody had a good rep against Creed Humphrey, Cam Sample did. All right. I hope.
And that actually happened in practices. That happened in practices where I'm trying to think of who it was, but he generally was not getting beat in the practice, and Cam Sample was the guy that gave him trouble all of a sudden, and that was, you know, I'll have it here in a second, but there are a couple of good guys in their practices and on the offensive line. I think we've talked about them, but you know, Deontay Brown, he beat Deontay Brown pretty easily, but Deontay showed that he can be beat on the outside with speed. He beat Trey Smith, which was, you know, that's kind of a bigger deal there. And he beat, I don't think he ever got to face off with Leatherwood. But you know, he definitely was beating Drake Jackson, Alaric Jackson, guys like that. So he was just all over the place. And then he had the, I think he was defensive MVP of the game or something like that. I think that's what it was, but yeah, he's phenomenal.
All right. I hope everybody is happy with our Senior Bowl coverage this year, because I don't see anybody else doing what we did. Mm-hmm. All right. But now we're going to get into the game. Okay. It's kind of weird that this is our Super Bowl special, and we've done an hour and a half on offensive coordinators and the Senior Bowl. And now we're going to do about 5 minutes on a game.
Ethan and I were just down Tampa. Going by the Super Bowl experience and Radio Row, it's oddly appropriate. It's we called this Super Bowl 55. It really feels like 54 and a half.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the truth. It just doesn't, this is such a wasted opportunity for the city of Tampa. I have to think that they're going to put a Super Bowl back here within 3-4 years to make up for it. Mm-hmm. It's no man's land out there. Radio Row was, I mean, I was at Radio Row last year in Miami, Super Bowl week. You know, it's bustling, it's tight. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. And this, we went to Radio Row. It was depressing. It was just, we walked out of there just depressed.
Well, Radio Row is usually depressing.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, and I don't think so. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of things happening, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people and a lot of players and a lot of different personalities and stuff like that. Radio Row, when we went in there, was just all this massively spaced out, super quiet, just everybody looked like they wanted to kill themselves. And that's, I mean, that's the whole Super Bowl area this year over by the, you know, it's tough. It's really tough. They're doing the best they can. And I really appreciate the things that they're doing to make everybody safe, and you know, phenomenal job that they're doing. But it's a really tough thing. And so it feels oddly, you know, appropriate for us to just spend basically 5 minutes at the end of the podcast on the game.
Yeah. And I'll start off like this, and I guess, you know, we could just get into what we think can happen. Well, you and me, come on, you know, both of us are huge Patrick Mahomes fans. Okay. By extension, it makes us Chiefs fans in a game like this. That Tom Brady's on the other side, you know, forget it. All right. Mm-hmm. -3 looks great to me. Why am I afraid to bet against Tom Brady and these Tampa Bay Bucks, Chris?
Yeah, I think that if you look at in previous Super Bowls, they find the game seems to have a way of becoming close.
Yes.
Or being a close game. I mean, even though you'd think that the averages, and it just somebody would run away with it more often. But
remember that the NFC kept blowing out the AFC for 4,000 years in a row. Remember?
Right. Exactly.
And then to the point where people were speculating, you know what, we got to join the playoffs so that way we could possibly have a Giants Eagles Super Bowl, you know,
right. Okay.
Or a Giants 49ers Super Bowl, because all of these bums from the AFC are worthless. Okay. That's what at one point that was the hot take.
Yeah, I could see it. But, you know, it's been lately, it's been just like finding a way to be close. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'd hesitate on that 3, is because I think it could be a push. You know, I think it could be exactly 3. Mm-hmm. But I was saying earlier today, Ethan and I were videotaping, and I think that, and you and I have had this discussion before, and you're wondering, you know, because the Chiefs aren't winning by that much, and you know, are they losing it? Are they losing their magic? Mm-hmm. And to me, I think it's the opposite. I think that they added to their magic. And it's because last year we knew that they could front run. We knew that they could show up and just blow you out of the game, you know, start off with three touchdowns in a 5-minute period and then just, you know, just victimize you after that. And just, I think that we knew that that could happen. It can still happen. It could happen in this game easily, because they're that dangerous. But at the end of the season last year, and especially in the Super Bowl, what they started to show was the character to start winning these close ones and to really fight. And I think that's a different, characteristic for a team. And so when they won however many in a row this year that they won,
it was
by
eight.
Tight scores.
It was eight
in a row.
NFL record, 8 games in a row by 6 or less points. That streak ended against the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship game.
You know, it's one thing if it's the Buffalo Bills doing that and you start to question whether, you know, because if the Buffalo Bills were doing that, it's because their offense isn't too good. And so there, you'd be like, you know, maybe the Buffalo Bills, they're kind of lucky to scrape by. If it's a team that, you know, can blow you out because they have that ability, that kind of ability, the 8 in a row winning tight games, you know, really pulling it out. It's like a horse. It's like the horse with tactical speed. It's like a horse it's like American Pharoah.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically the horse that can blow you out from wire to wire. Mm-hmm. Also the horse that can look the other horse in the eye and come out ahead.
Yeah.
You know,
sit off the leader.
That's
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, or come off the leader. I mean, that's what I think the Chiefs are showing this year. And I think that's scary as shit. And I don't think there's any way that they're losing this game, but you know, now I say that they're going to lose.
Yeah, I'll say this.
The power of my jinx is really strong.
Yeah, Tampa Bay looked overwhelming in these playoffs, especially considering that Tom Brady was absolutely awful in the second half against an Aaron Rodgers-led team in Green Bay, and it still wasn't enough to beat Tampa Bay. So, I don't know. They're finding ways. Now, I will say this. Minus 3.5, I would not take the Chiefs. I don't like the game. Now, -3, yeah, I'll have some fun with it. To be honest with you, I'm probably going to play some props. You know, play some props just because it's the Super Bowl. I like to have a little money on it.
Why not some DFS with Prize Picks?
Absolutely. Or, you know, of course, if you're going to bet on the game, my bookie, and use 3 yards. But let's get to it. What happens in the game? Give me a score. And give me the MVP.
Okay, the MVP is gonna be Patrick Mahomes. I do believe.
Whoa, you know you came off the top rope with that one. You know, hot take.
really going out on a limb here. It's gonna be Patrick Mahomes, and I think that it's gonna be a closer game. You know, just let's call it 4 points because I think the odds are it's either the push on the 3 or a win for the Chiefs against the spread. But I think it's going to be one of those games where it's like 32 to 28 or something like that. And I think that, I think the Bucks might have a defensive touchdown, you know, I could see that happening, but I think the Chiefs just have too much character in those tight ones. I scares the shit out of me if I know that they can blow you out or they can win the tight one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of with you, and I'm gonna go off the board because I am gonna bet this. I was thinking about this today, and I was like, okay, if there was gonna be somebody else in this game, out of everybody in this game, outside of the two quarterbacks, to win the MVP, who would it be? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, oh, that one's obvious. Tyreek Hill, right?
Tyreek Hill.
Look at what he did against the Bucks last time. Okay? He had 200 yards in the first quarter. First quarter, 200 yards receiving. Okay. I think if he does that again, I think it'll be just too obvious, and you cannot deny him the MVP. So that's going to be my shot in the dark for MVP. I'm going to call the score 34-31, and I think both quarterbacks play well. I think Tom Brady has more of a running component in this game. I think Fournette put some yards up, but it won't be enough. And I think it'll end with Tom Brady with the football, maybe throwing an interception somewhere around midfield. But
you know what's interesting about that, though, with Tom Brady? I'm a believer in the momentum thing, and mm-hmm. he had piss-poor momentum at the end of that conference championship. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really awful in the latter part of that game. And I wonder if that carries in, but you know, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. I expect a good game though. And yeah. you know, as far as being at home, you know, what kind of advantage is it? Well, you get to use your own, well, they have used their own practice facility. So that's a thing, right? But, you know, you don't have your home crowd. Even if it was a Super Bowl, you're not going to have your home crowd. You haven't had your home crowd all year anyway. Sure. So I don't think it makes much of a difference. I think, you know, there is that Florida jinx, you know, which I don't think is much of a jinx when he keeps winning every time for Patrick Mahomes. He just doesn't play his best, let's just say. So, you know, Tampa Bay has a lot going for them. But, you know, I'm throwing in with Patrick Mahomes. And
he threw for 462 yards in that game against the Bucks.
That's crazy, right?
And to your point about Tyreek Hill, he had 269 of those yards. 13 catches for 269 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I say he does it again, okay? And I think that's how you cannot deny him the MVP. I think if a wide receiver in a Super Bowl has 200 and something yards receiving and probably 2 or 3
and 3 touchdowns. Yeah.
You cannot deny him the MVP.
Yeah. Even if the quarterback had, you know, the stat line he did not have a perfect quarterback rating. So it was probably, it had to be close, but
yeah,
it wasn't.
I don't think it was because I think, didn't he throw a pick late in the game or something? Because Tampa Bay was on the comeback trail.
No picks, but, you know, he was 37 of 49. So that right there, 37 of 49 is 76%.
That's ridiculous.
For 462 yards, 462 yards.
That's all?
That's 9.4 YPA.
Wow.
3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions.
Wow.
I'm a little bit shocked that's not a perfect rating, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know. Enjoy the game, dear listeners. You cannot complain this week, all right? If, you know, if anybody says that we were just, you know, mailing it in this week, you know, stop listening to the show. So this was our Super Bowl special. I hope you enjoy it. There was everything in this thing. And as far as Senior Bowl, like, is anybody offering our coverage? No. That's the quick answer. But thank you for listening all year. The season is winding down. We got, like, what, one more show left in the season? Before we start season 4 of 3 Yards Per Carry. So we will see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.